Welcome to the Chosen Brew Beer Podcast. My name's Ian McNally, and this is the podcast where guests talk the way through the six beers that changed everything. In this episode, I spoke with Emily Sauter from Pints and Panels. If you've never heard of that, take a look at the show notes. All the links are in there. It is so much free beer content, which is going to be so useful to you regardless of what stage on your beer journey you are. This episode is fascinating and the beer journey superb. Let's get into it. Well, welcome to the Chosen Brew Beer Podcast, Em. You're all the way in America. Can you please describe exactly where you are and also where you fit into beer?
So I am in Connecticut, which is about I'm equidistant between where I live, the city I live in is equidistant between Boston and New York City. It's about an hour and 45 minutes to 2 hours from both. I am a cartoonist and founder of the website Pints and Panels, where I draw about visual beer education, mostly in series. So I do series about beer styles, which is beer style simple. I do a hop version as well as hop variety simple. Beer style simple is every Monday, and then hop variety simple is every Friday. I also do I've done a bunch of visual syllabi for Cicerone that on my own, not for them, level one, and I'm working on the master because I took the master twice, did not pass. Usually takes three times, hopefully, fingers crossed. I should have taken it last week if we were in non-COVID times, but they've moved it to next year, so I'll take it then. I'm also an author. My first book, Beers for Everyone of Drinking Age, was published in 2017 by a Japanese publisher, One Piece. And I'm working on my second book called Hooray for Beer, which is going to be published by Brewers Publications, and that will be out in 2022 sometime. So I'm also a beer judge. I've judged all over. Great American Beer Festival. I did AIBA last year in Australia, which was awesome. I loved every minute of Australia. I thought it was the most like wonderful country. I want to go back. I wish the flight wasn't so long.
Well, it's going to be extremely long, the flight back with the current COVID situation.
I have a friend who's Australian and he lives in the UK. He can't even get back. They're like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And they it got to the point where even Australians couldn't leave Australia to go to different countries. So, but can I say, from the start that I really love what you do for so many reasons. Clearly, you're very knowledgeable about beer. But it's one thing being knowledgeable about beer, but it's another thing being able to share that knowledge in a very easily approachable and straightforward, simple manner. That is really how you unlock learning and also demystify. But also, you know, your book is called Beer for Everyone. Is that right?
Yeah, beer is for everyone. But yeah, of drinking age. So like not... but anyone, you know, of drinking age, whatever your country's drinking age is, be it, you know, 18 or 21 or who knows, you know, non-existent. So...
But where does the passion for sharing your knowledge come from? Because clearly there's lots of people in beer and every aspect of life who accrue a huge amount of knowledge. Universities are full of these people, and often those people don't simplify what they've learned, don't transmit it in a very easy to understand way. What is it that drives you to share the knowledge, firstly, but also... maybe if you also talk about the style in which you do that, because it's a really unique and approachable style.
Well, thanks. I try to draw. I've been told that my comics are quote adorable, which I think is it's very simple. I've been drawing the same way since I was 11, and I was given an Archie comic, the Archie, Betty, and Veronica, Jughead, and I tried to copy that in a study hall in sixth grade, and I kind of got it, which became my signature style. So it's me trying to rip off Archie and Betty and Veronica. But I really think that beer is something that everyone enjoys for the most part, even if they don't know it yet. There's always something. There's beer. Beer tastes like everything. When I give I give a lot of local library talks in the normal times, and I go, you know, people go, people are like, well, I like beer, and I'm like, but beer tastes like chocolate or coffee or these flavors that you readily identify with that you actually really like. And if you can kind of convince people that beer has similar flavors to the things they already really like, they'll latch onto it and they'll go, oh, I like that. Therefore, maybe I'll like this. And there's beer is such a rabbit hole. There's so much to try and see this infinite. Like when I went to visit Australia, I walked into bottle shops. I didn't recognize a single label. But everything I had was very good, very high quality. I was very, very impressed with almost every beer I had in Australia was great. But I want everyone to also learn about beer as well. So I use my art to, and I also, all my art is available for free on my website in an educational archive, which I think education should be something that's available to everybody, not just anyone who can afford it or buy books or anything like that. So I make sure that all my comics are free. So if people have questions about beer, they can go on my website. I also do copious research because I want to make sure that the work that I'm putting out there is accurate. I have a very big bone to pick with a lot of beer websites that put out information and that are false. It drives me wild. So I have known sources that I use that I look at. And I always want to make sure that all my work that goes out there is 100% accurate, because if you're going to learn about beer, you should learn about it the correct way. That's why I'm here.
Well, it's fantastic that it's available for free. And I think, you know, just having that ability to dissect, say, just pick one hop and describe where it's from, what it should smell like, what beers it's used in, is so good. And then it goes from like a simple isolated thing like that to then more complicated things. Like I saw one which is from the Certified Beer Server syllabus, which is the quantitative parameters of beer character, which is an intimidating title for many who just want a beer. But the way you kind of dissect that into different parts is really impressive. I want to talk about as well beer myths, because there's a lot of mythology around beer. Certainly growing up in the UK, we had lots of myths about, you know, Guinness is a meal, dark beer fills you up quicker than light beer, you know, Stella was brewed with fish heads, all these crazy mythologies. Does that exist in the US? And
God, yes.
Is it worse? Or...
So the big one in the US, which is not in the UK, is that you can't get beer cold then warm again. This is a huge problem in America.
Can you explain that again? You can't get...
I buy beer out of... this. I'm serious. This happens a lot. I buy beer... So someone comes to the brewery I work at. I work at Fox Farm. They roll up all of our beers cold. And they go, do you have the beer warm? Because I'm going to travel... and I can't get the beer warm and then cold and then warm again because it'll lose its flavor. That is a huge issue in America. I've interrupted strangers at the grocery store where they're like, oh no, we can't buy it cold from the cooler. We have to buy it over here because if it gets warm and then cold again, somehow it'll mess it up. Which, to be fair, if you boil it, you know, let's say you left it in a hot car for a really long time, and then you put it in the freezer, then yeah, you're gonna do some stuff to it. But you take it from 38 degrees or whatever, you know, and move it to room temperature in America, 68, you move it to 68, and then you put it back in the freezer, you're not doing any harm to it. But this is a huge myth. Historically, they think it was something to do with the macro, so they could keep beer colder. And it's just something that, I don't know. I used to think that this was accurate until I worked at a beer bar in Oregon and my coworker was like, you know, that's a myth, right? And I was like, no, no. So, yeah, and that's a huge myth in America. It's probably the biggest one, that you can't get beer cold. You can't buy beer cold, then get it warm again, then get it cold again.
It tells us a lot, doesn't it? I think beer is a good vehicle for this, but it tells us a lot of who we are as people, that you can have such myths that really take a hold and are then very hard to knock down or challenge, even when evidence and proof is shown.
I tell people when I do library talks all the time, it's the thing I lead off with. And over the majority of the room is like, kind of looks at me like I'm lying to them, but they're like, no, 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 you're the person giving the talk, so you probably know what you're talking about. It's a huge one in America. That's the like biggest beer myth. There's a lot of beer myth. A lot of it comes with beer history too, just in the world in general. Cause history I find is a lot of like passed down verbally, or it's a lot of hearsay, or I thought I heard or something. So I find that beer history can be, there's a lot of, or legends that aren't necessarily facts that are true, you know, that people say are true. So beer has its own, I mean, the fact that like this liquid has its own mythology is pretty cool. I actually think it's kind of funny. Pretty cool.
No, it's kind of nice to, it's almost like you wouldn't have it any other way, because having those myths there existing in the population at large makes the idea of becoming an expert or a specialist in knowledge that much more appealing, because it's kind of fun to be able to challenge those preconceived ideas and knock them down. I think one I grew up with was that beer in a can was much more fizzy than beer in a bottle.
I was just about to talk to you about beer in a can. Yeah, or beer in the can back in the day gave off a bad flavor. So it's a generational thing. People who are older gravitate towards bottles. Although that is changing. In America, we're very, most things are in can. Most breweries can. The brewery I work at, Fox Farm, we have a bottling line, and we'll do bottles for barrel aged stuff, mixed fermentation, but the range of beers that we make are all 16 ounce cans. And it's interesting, state by state, the can preference changes. So certain states like the 16 ounce can, certain states are bottle states. I used to work at a larger brewery before I left to study for the master's Cicerone exam, and we would move into a state and go, all right, are you a bottle or a can state? Because there was either, and it was weird. It's like New Hampshire is a bottle state. They're much more into bottles, whereas Vermont is a can state. And so even though they're right next to each other, there's these like huge like preference differential. It's a lot of data and science and math and all that stuff comes in with beer as well, which I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting. Here in Australia, the cans have taken off hugely in the last 2 years or so, a bit longer. But there is a perception here, and certainly was a perception, that a bottle was much more appropriate for a restaurant dinner table than a can. Like, is that the same in the US? Is there any sort of class system in the US in terms of the way cans and bottles are seen?
Cans definitely are more backyard barbecue, more, you know, tailgating at a sports event or for sporting events outside, hiking. But now that most people use cans, like you wouldn't go to the beer that goes to like the high end restaurants are usually bottle conditioned saisons or other normally in bottles. Cause yeah, there is this kind of luxury factor, which is funny because most breweries that are like the hype breweries nowadays that command a price for trading and other stuff, most of them only can or not, or most of their beer is in cans. And cans are expensive. A four pack of certain, you know, double IPAs can be $20, $22. I know in Australia, you guys, your beer is pricey.
Yeah, people would be wincing at the you know, celebrating being able to buy 4 IPAs for $22.
I was judging at AIBA and I was talking to a brewer over lunch, and I said, yeah, I left my brother-in-law who watched our cat and house sat for us when we were in Australia. I left him a 30 pack of Genesee Cream Ale. It was $14. He was like, you're lying to me. I was like, no, it was $14 for 30 beers, and good. And Jenny Cream Ale is pretty good for a budget brand. So yeah, no, I know the pricing in Australia. So I wanted to, like, $22 is a lot in America for beer. Beer typically is much cheaper. Normally, I want to say, we sell our cans at Fox Farm as singles. So one can is for an IPA, let's say our regular IPA is $4.25 a can, that's about the normal price. You're looking at like a $15 four pack.
And a six pack of Sierra Nevada
is pale. $10.
$10. So here it would be, yeah, it'd be about 25 to 30 Australian dollars.
I remember. See, and then I remember, like, I do the math in my head about, you know, because the dollar is more so than the Australian dollar. And I'd be like, oh, okay, well, that's still a lot.
Yeah. Yes. Even when you work it out, it's still a lot. It's interesting, back to the point of cans and bottles as well. There is a brewer in Australia, Bridge Road, who are based in a regional town, a good 3-4 hours drive outside of Melbourne. And they have a hybrid, so they do lots of bottles for country Victoria and regional distribution, and then the cans for the city. So it's actually really fascinating how that's going to play out over time. I presume we will all migrate to cans, apart from those, as you say, those bottle conditioned and traditional styles. But yeah, I think, again, it's a story of beer being able to reflect and tell us a lot more about our society and our expectations and ambitions and so on. Let's get started on your beer journey. 6 beers that changed everything. I am very excited to find out your beer journey. So let's start with choice one.
So I wanted to talk about the beer that started it all, which was, I'll set the scene, it's 2006, it's the Super Bowl, and the Pittsburgh Steelers are playing the Seattle Seahawks, and I'm with my good friend Jeremy, and we are at a sports bar in Keene, New Hampshire, so like the western part of the state, because our friend left us to go to a contra dance. It's a New England folk dancing. It's weird. It's like square dancing, line dance. I don't know. It's a Northern New England and like New York State thing.
I come from a country that has Morris dancing, where
my friend Dave, who left us, also was he did Morris dancing at the Unitarian Church every other week. So yeah,
wearing bells around your ankles and waving handkerchiefs in the air is apparently passes as a hobby.
So we were watching the Super Bowl, and I order a Sam Adams White Ale in a 25-ounce mug for $4.50. And I took a sip, and I was like, "What is this?" And the lady's like, "It's a wit beer." And I'm like, I don't know what that is. I'm 23. And I had drank beer before. We class it up in college. We wouldn't drink cheap stuff. We drink Yingling, because I went to college in New York State. A lot of Molson, so a lot of Canadian beer. And I had a sip of the Sam Adams White Ale, and I was like, well, this changes everything. And that was it. I don't know what love at first sight is, except that moment. It was amazing. I drank four of them. I drank a lot. I drank, and then I ate a lot of Domino's pizza. I don't remember who won. I want to say the Steelers won that game. I don't remember.
One of our listeners will be able to tell us.
I wasn't driving. Our friend picked us up. I was with my friend, yeah, Jeremy and I were hanging out, drinking Sam Adams White Ales, and I was just like, this is delicious. It used to be their spring seasonal. They don't make it anymore. They make it as their Christmas beer, but instead of coriander, they put cinnamon in it. So it's Sam Adams White Christmas now. My first book is dedicated to Sam Adams White Ale because of how, like, I would not be talking to you if it weren't for Sam Adams White Ale. And then I ate a bunch of really terrible garbage with it. I had like a, I don't remember what the sports bar was called. It had a fake Irish like pub vibe, but it was attached to a Domino's pizza. So I was eating like really bad pizza, and oh, it was a mess of a night. It was also snowing really hard because it's January in, you know, New England. But I remember that first sip. I was standing at the bar. The lady gave it to me. I paid her. I took a sip, and I was just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like it changed my life. Like it literally, that beer changed my life. And I am forever grateful to, and every time I meet someone from Sam Adams, I tell them that story, but I come on a little too hard and they always lose it out. Like I've told Jim Cook that story and Jim is just like, whoa, hey, tone it down.
What is it, do you think, that made you choose that beer and not just go with the regular beer that you would normally drink?
I don't know, because I think I would, the beer that I was on at that bar was like, you know, it's a sports bar. So there's like PB, because I used to, so I moved to Keene, New Hampshire that fall and I used to drink there all the time. I was only there for a few months living with my friend Dave, the one who Morris dances, because he needed a roommate for a few months. And it was, you know, they had Bud Light, normal like PBR, other like macro stuff. And then they had Sam, and Sam is such a, Sam Adams is the kind of beer that it's the step up. And I mean that as a compliment. I don't mean that as a, I really love Sam Adams beer. I think that they do a really great job. I think that their whole portfolio currently is really delicious. I really like what they do. Sam Oktoberfest was the beer that my friend's older brother would buy my friend Sean and I when we were underage. And then we would be like, whoa, we're fancy. You know, like that's the kind of, when we were like 19. So I think that Sam Adams is, and everyone, talk to a lot of people in the beer industry and they go, what got you into beer? Chances are it's probably either a Sam Adams or a Sierra Nevada product. Those are two huge brands in America that do a really great, high quality job on a national level. And for people my age, that's going to be the seasonals. They're like winter lager or, you know, Oktoberfest, Sam Summer. There's spring seasonals never sell in America, so they constantly change. And so the white ale was the spring, and by spring, nothing comes out when the season actually is. So spring is like December 15th to March 15th. the winter.
Yeah, I like a spring ale that you can enjoy in the snow. That seems.
The Sam Summer comes out in March, and you're like, there's still snow on the ground.
And now I'm really interested because that beer obviously flicked a switch, and then surely you're on this journey and adventure where you're now very motivated to find and seek out different beers. Let's go to choice two. We might talk about beers that didn't quite make the list as well on the way.
Yeah, I took Allagash White off the list. But Allagash White is one of those like desert island beers. And that's also a whip beer that I think is a phenomenal. My list goes on beers that I had in a certain place that invoke memory and like travel. And there's, for the most part, and there's certain memories that I have of traveling with beer that heighten the experience of what we were doing. And it just like, they make me feel good inside. So those are the times, that's what I've chosen for the most part. The next beer is a totally different is one of my favorite, it's attached to one of my favorite beer memories of all time. So you flash forward to 2014. So like eight years later. My boyfriend at the time, now my husband, and I were in Alaska, and we went to Denali National Park. And we went, so you can't drive in Denali. You have to take a bus to go into the park because it's the tundra. I mean, you're like in the middle of nowhere. And it's 8 a.m. and we've taken a growler of beer with us on the bus. It's a small growler. It's a 32. We bought it at a beer store in Anchorage with a good friend of mine who lives in Anchorage. And it's Too Much Coffee Man by Gigantic Brewing, which is a brewery in Portland, Oregon. And it is a coffee saison. So we're like, well, this is a breakfast beer. So we get espresso, and then we use the espresso cups to drink the beer. And we're like secretly pouring it, not on the bus. No one cares. The bus is full of like older tourists, and it's early enough where like no one would care. So we're drinking the beer out of like kind of crappy coffee cups, like the disposable paper ones. And the bus is going along, and the bus driver stops and says, "Everybody shut up." Like he yells at us. And we're all like, what's going on? And he goes, "Everybody look to your right." So everybody looks, and about, I want to say like 80 yards away, there's a mama grizzly and she's nursing cubs. And we're like, whoa, this is the craziest thing. And I'm drinking this beer and I have a coffee cup. It stays on while this mama grizzly nurses cubs on the side of the road. It was one of the most beautiful things in the beer height. I know the owner of Gigantic, this guy Ben, who's just a lovely person. And I was like, "Dude, I drank your beer while grizzly nursed her child." Like, he's like, "Are you feeling okay? What's wrong here?" And it was one of the best experiences. And I'll always remember that. And I always remember the beer that I was drinking because it was one of the craziest things. I tried to take a photo, but like on my cell phone, it was the coolest thing that I've ever seen, probably. This giant bear with the cubs. And, you know, she was totally unfazed. She didn't know we were there because she's used to the buses and stuff. It was the coolest thing I've ever seen. And the beer heightened the experience. So yeah, I was eating like a pound cake out of a gross muffin too. Like, it was kind of a mess.
I love that story because I suppose it's very tempting, I suppose, when you've got a choice of six beers to choose, particularly when you know a lot about beer, to choose try and choose the best beers or try and choose the most impressive beers. But I think this is the sweet spot of this podcast is experience. It's actually when that moment that you had there would have been very different without the beer there. And I'll just say as a public service announcement, not all drivers of buses are as friendly and affable and care as much about wildlife or for their fellow human man.
He was good. He would like, they like talk there because they're like park rangers. So they're driving along and the drive is really long. You're like going, I think you're there on the bus for 5 hours and then the bus continues and then you can either go back and they'll just drop you off wherever you want. Like you can be like, "Yo, drop me off here next to this like waterfall." And they're like, "Okay, bye. You know, be safe." Especially because it's gigantic. Wow. Yeah. So they pick up people as well if they have space. So like hikers or anybody else. So it was a really fun experience. And he pointed out other animals. We watched a fox catch a like a vole or something, which was cool. We saw a lot of moose, bighorn sheep. I mean, and the beer scene in Alaska, I know the beer that I mentioned is from Oregon. But the beer scene was amazing. We went to Midnight Sky Brewing in Anchorage and the lady was like, "Come, I'll give you a tour. You got to drink out of the fish." And we were like, "The fish?" And she's like, "Oh yeah, our neighbor taxidermied us a king salmon. And if you push the fin, it pees beer." So I have a photo of my friend Loy and my husband like pushing the fin, and it's like pale, it's like their pale ale is on draft, and it's, instead of like a normal tap, it's like you push the fin and it comes out the back of the fish.
That confirms that there isn't a huge amount to do in Alaska.
No, it's besides like hiking and skiing and outdoor stuff, there it gets dark, you know, 4 months out of the year it's dark all the time, and then the next 4 months in the summer it's light all the time. You wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, what time is it? It's 3 and the sun is up. Like, it looks like it's 9 in the morning. It's a wild, wild place, but the beer was really, really excellent. It was an awesome, awesome trip. So, great beer trip.
It's such a unique experience. And amazing that you beer from Oregon. When you've got such good beer in your state, I mean, beer is very parochial in the USA, isn't it? It's like kind of the distribution is, people are very loyal to their local breweries. Is that true to say?
They are, but there's a lot of regionality with beer. So when things come to other states, it's really nice. When the larger players show up, Connecticut has really weird laws, so it's harder to distribute here. I've been known to drive to New York, which is about 45 minutes from here, on the highway, to go to a beer store in New York because they have a much better selection than we do. But people are, it's a local thing. You buy local. The town that I live in a city of about 75,000 people, and we have two breweries. And they're both pretty good. One is better than the other, but they're nice places to go and hang out. Even now in COVID, well, one of them had a COVID outbreak, so that's a problem. But the other one has really nice outdoor seating.
Yeah. This is something that we're learning very quickly in Victoria, that outdoor seating is the way forward. But thankfully, we're going into summer at the moment. That said, it's still pretty chilly right now in Melbourne. But choice three.
So the rest of I wanted to talk about my favorite beer glass, which is we've been to Belgium a few times. And my favorite beer glass, we go to A La Mort Subite, which unfortunately I just heard filed for bankruptcy and they don't know if it'll reopen, which is a real bummer because it's one of those classic, it's been a beer bar since the early 20th century. It's a beautiful, you know, lots of mirrors and surly waitstaff and ties and old Belgian ladies drinking, you know, Trappist ales, reading the newspaper. I love A La Mort Subite a lot. We always go every time. And I love going there because it has my favorite things that I look for in a place to drink, which is it's quiet or at least semi-quiet. You can always get a table. There's always places to sit. And the beer selection is really good. And so the first time I went to A La Mort Subite was with my husband and then his two friends who are Dutch. Well, one of them's American, but he married a Dutch woman. And so they came down on the train and met us for a drink. And we went to A La Mort Subite and I ordered a Ciné Blonde. And this, I like the Ciné Blonde cup because it's a definite takeoff of the Chimay. I have one. I have it. See if I can find it. I'll bring you with me. Where is it? I've drank out of this glass like once because I love it so much. I did not steal this glass because I'm not that kind of person. I bought it at a beer shop. But I love this beer glass so much. And there's just something about Belgian beer culture that, here, I'll show you. I know that when, in Belgian beer culture, there's something about a beer glass, and it just came with it's a blonde ale, so a big, you know, Belgian head. It was late. Normally I don't drink after a certain time. I'm prone to getting hungover and I'm also a lightweight. But it was like 11 at night. It was in March, late March of 2015. So it had been raining and it was cold. And this, like, we're in this warm bar and this glass shows up of Ciné Blonde and it was just so good. And I remember, and we were eating a bunch of like, I don't even know what kind of cheese it was. It was just, they like cut it into cubes and they give you like a toothpick and you're just like, I'm just gonna, all right, sure. And I remember thinking, so now every time I go to Belgium, I have to go to Le Mort Sweet and I have to order a Cinnabon. It's a must. It's become a tradition. I got to take two of my really good friends that went to Belgium with me last year to Mortsebeet, and I was like, Cinnabons for everyone, because it's just, it's a beautiful presentation and it's a beautiful beer, and it's, it really exemplifies the Belgian beer experience. Like even the like diviest dive bar will have proper glassware.
Yeah, I like the way that you characterize the wait staff as being surly. Sorry, I really like when you are on holiday somewhere, surly wait staff is quaint and nice and quite amusing. But if that happened in your hometown, you'd be annoyed.
Well, their problem, you know, and they're like white shirts and you know, and you're trying to like butcher their language, and they're not having any of it. So it's I love like drinking Cinnabons. It's become a Belgian tradition to go there and drink that beer. Sadly, that may never happen again if they close, but I have a lot of really good memories of going there and having that beer in out of that, you know, glass that looked like that. And it made me just, yeah.
That bulbous nature of the glass is so dramatic, and also helps that beer to warm up a little, you know, to take your time a little. You can probably just about get your nose in there, and the rim of the glass would just, yeah, hit you in the bridge of the nose.
And my favorite thing about it is, yeah, sure. Oh, my husband's here. He can even wave.
Hello.
He just got home from work. So
well done.
My favorite thing about this glass is, yeah, it's got a real snifter quality to it, but look how low the fill line is. It's almost more than halfway down the glass. And that's all for the head of the beer, which is insane. Belgian beers are notorious for like high vol of carb, but it's just, I literally have had one beer out of this glass. We have a lot of beer glasses that we don't drink out of, which is kind of a waste. I know that, but I don't want anything to happen to them. I've broken glasses before where you're like, no, I broke a, we went to Belgium last year and I had a Drefontein, like this really cool, almost like a vase glass that I bought there, and I cracked it in the sink and I was like, no. Oh, I was devastated. But I have to remember it's glassware. It's okay.
Yeah. It's better to have loved than lost than never to have loved, isn't it? So I even with nice glassware, and I presume there's a built-in obsolescence with many commercial glass makers as well. And how well, you know, in Belgium, clearly they kind of lead the world in this theatrical glassware pairing with the historic beers. How well do America generally, or your part of America, how well do they do that? Because one challenge that I see in the US is that in Australia, we normally have maybe bars will show off if they've got five taps of, you know, of different beers. We've got five beers, or we've got 10 beers, and that's about the limit. There are some exceptions, like the local tap house who regularly has 19 taps, which is an amazing achievement in Australia. But in America, if you have 50 taps and 60 taps and 80 taps in your average bar, how well does that get managed, and in terms of glassware, and what is the challenge there for somebody like yourself who is you know, aiming to achieve Master Cicerone? How well can you manage that many taps and still maintain quality?
If it's a beer bar, usually it has a good, they'll do like a tulip glass, so like a footed, kind of like the Cine Blanc glass, but not as like bulbous. That'll be 16 ounces, because a beer pour is about 16 here. or 12, and they'll usually do that. Most places, so the way that they'll get glassware is the distributor will give them glassware, or they'll get a glassware from the brewery. And so it's kind of up to what the brewery will give them. Depending, I'm talking about like a normal like bar and grill. There's a bar near our house that on Sundays will give you a Miller Lite in a glass shaped like a football, 23 ounces for $3. $3.50. But they actually have a very great draft selection. I think they have at least 25, 30 beers on draft, and their craft selection and local craft selection is very, very good. For a college, I live near a local college, like for a college bar, it's got a really great selection. Mostly, I feel like glassware, this may get me in trouble, but like a lot of places are hey, what do you got? And then you get shaker pints, which is, you know, a straight sided normal glass that you can stack that has a logo on it. I don't expect any kind of like flair when I go out. We went out last week for dinner with my mother, and they served us pilsners in like a stemmed tulip style glass, which for a normal bar, that's pretty much what you should expect. And that was fine. I mean, that's fine. So a lot of places will have for beer, if it's a nicer place, they're not going to have the whole like proper glassware setup. That's rare, but they'll have like one utility glass that kind of works for all beers. So, and I'm not mad about that. I think that's fine. As long as you're not giving me like a pitcher of Russian Imperial Stout, I'm fine. I'm fine with.
Yeah, I think there's a balance, isn't there? Because when you're running a volume venue, then you have to, you know, factor in not only cost breakages, but also just the logistics of being able to wash and being able to fit glasses into the glass washer and all of those things that obviously become more problematic when you're dealing with Belgium chalices and delicate glassware and that type of thing.
Or like a large wine glass works really well for beer. I went to a beer bar in Melbourne, and that was, they gave us, it was a wine glass that they gave us. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, I know certainly Molly Rose serve all the beers in a wine style glass. Nick Sandery, who is the brewer there, he's previously been a guest on this podcast, but he would, you know, really advocate for the presentation of his beers in that particular way, because, you know, he says that does lift the kind of quality of it and the presentation and the experience. I think that's one thing that I suppose is different, isn't it, in different cultures, is that experiential thing that really can elevate an experience. And clearly in Alaska, I mean, if they can put on coffee cups and a grizzly bear.
I forget what beer store it was. I used to have I think we kept the growler. It was like a small growler. We bought it. I don't remember what the beer store was called, but it was a really nice one in Anchorage. It had a really, really great selection of beers. My friend took us there, and I was really, really impressed. It was like the beer deep. I don't remember, a beer bodega or something. It was a really nice store. I don't remember what it was called, but hats off to their beer selection. It was really great. We drank a lot of really good beer in Alaska. There's a really great brewery in Denali National Park called 49th State, where they shut down for part of the year when it snows and it's too crazy and dark. And so they fill all their fermenters with high alcohol beer, so like Doppelbocks and big beers, and they just leave it. And the guy goes back to, he's from Staten Island, he's from New York City, he goes to Staten Island with his wife. And then after like a couple months, he goes back. And then all this great beer is ready.
Wow.
And their beer was really good. I really enjoyed their, you know, it's in a touristy location, but the beer quality was really high. So
that's tremendous. I think Australia's highest brewery, Blizzard Brewery, which is up in the mountains in Victoria, I think it might currently be up for sale. So if that guy is listening and wants to buy another, like, because you could do it intermittently in seasons. So yeah, fill up the tanks, go back to the summer season in Alaska, and then switch over. What a life. Choice four.
I wanted to highlight when the only time I've been to Germany was we went to Belgium in 2016 in the fall for like 4 or 5 days, my husband and I, and we took a day trip to Cologne because it's only an hour and 45 minute train, and it was a Sunday morning and it was beautiful out, and so it's like 10:30 in the morning and we go to Fra, the Kölsch bar that's right on the square with the big cathedral, and we sit down and it was my first legitimate fresh Kölsch, served by surly waitstaff. I don't speak German, and it was the first Kölsch that we had of like, we kind of did like a marathon day. We got to Cologne at like 9:30. We took the train. I think we left at like 7 or 7:30. And then our train left at 6. So we only had one, like the full day. And we drank a lot of Kölsch that day, but Fro was the first one. And they brought us the glasses. And I remember taking a sip with my husband, and he and I were just like, oh, sorry, I have a clock that goes.
It's beer o'clock.
Every podcast and interview, I'm like, oh, forgot to remind everyone about the clock. It's 8 o'clock.
That is very apt for the sound effect that you're sat in a square in Cologne with the cathedral and the cathedral bells.
And mass had just started. We walked up to the top and looked out onto the city, and then we went down, and it was our first beer after the like all the stairs up to the top, and it was one of the best beers I've ever drank. It was just so, it, you know, when like beer hits the spot where it's the right time and place, and everything. We were sitting out of doors. It was crowded. Most of the people who were there were locals. They were taking the day off. Everyone was chatty. My husband ordered this like giant pork knuckle or something. It came with fries. It was gigantic. We drank so many Kölsches that day. But that first one was just so good. And it made me so happy. Like German beer. I was supposed to go to Germany this year in late March. Obviously that did not happen. To go to Bamberg for the first time. I've only been to Cologne, and I've been to like the Munich airport. That does not count. But Cologne, the day trip to Cologne was really just a wonderful, kind of a good respite from Belgian beer is amazing, but there's something about taking a break and having a Pilsner or a lager or a Kölsch and leaving the country. And it was just so delicious.
Is it true that in the US, and certainly this happens here and possibly many other places as well, that a style like Kölsch will be completely overlooked sometimes, or completely lost in that hop aggression and the hop arms race, that a beer style like as you've just described, there wouldn't be a more perfect beer for that scenario that you had, but often it's kind of lost and people don't quite appreciate that.
I've had a similar experience with Kölsch. I went on a hike with when I lived in Vermont. I went to grad school in Vermont, and I went on a hike with all my cartoonist friends because I went to art school up there, and we hiked up this mountain and then we hiked down. It was very hot. It was July, and we went to Harpoon, which is a regional brewery in New England, in the Northeast. And they used to make, they don't make it anymore, a beer called Harpoon Summer, which was a Kölsch, and they served it in a much larger version of a Stinch, so like a bigger, and it was just like, it hit the spot. And there's something about Kölsches in the summer that just like really hit the spot. Things are changing here though in America. Things are getting more, as we say, crispy. Lagers are coming back. The brewery I work at has two horizontal lagering tanks. People come for the lagers. Lager breweries are starting to get a lot of acclaim. Breweries like Wayfinder in Portland, Oregon, Dovetail in Chicago, Von Trapp in Vermont. are making some really great, great lagers. So it's starting to kind of, people are starting to change. Not to say that hoppy beers aren't the norm, they are, but the crispy stuff really is, and I'm a crispy kid, that's what I call myself. I really love lagers. I think they're, I'm drinking one right now. So I really respect, I also really respect the tradition of German lager making, our top fermented lagers, like lagered beer, like a Kolsch, where it's just so good. It's like, you, when you have a good Kolsch, there's just nothing better. I really, really love, I think Kolsches are a phenomenal, phenomenal beer style.
So yeah,
we make a really good one where I work. Comes out this week, actually. We were drinking it off the Zwickel last weekend, off the Bright Tank, and it tasted really good. It hit the spot.
Yeah, having that, you know, the subtlety, but the complexity there, where you've got that kind of biscuity Moorishness that just makes you keep going back to that for that next mouthful, is really delightful. And I think you can get lost in that hype around hops and things like IPAs, but dialing it back, coming back to that simplicity and the, you know, the flawless nature of a well-made Kolsch is, yeah, really good. I really want to jump on a plane now and try that. The talk of a Bright Tank is too much. Choice five.
So I wanted to highlight one of my favorite beers, which is Russian River Supplication. I got an opportunity to go to Pliny the Younger Day when I was writing my first book. A very good friend of mine, my friend Jay Brooks, is friends with Vinny and Natalie, who own Russian River. And so the last time I had River Supplication at their table at Pliny the Younger Day, and they brought me, like, it was this like tiny seven of us, because I was trying to keep my cool and not get, because Pliny was like 10 or 11%. And then I didn't want to like drink too much. And Supplication's 7, it's higher alcohol. And so they gave me this like little tiny glass of it. And I'm drinking it, and Vinny and I are talking. They love cats. They have a couple cats, and I'm a big cat person. So we're like drinking Supplication, talking about cats. And I just remember my head being like, oh my God, I'm drinking Supplication, talking to Vinny from Russian River, and he and I are like yucking it up, talking about cats. And it made me feel that Pints and Panels was something that was like important, but also like that I worked really, I started Pints and Panels in 2010. So I've done it for over 10 years now. And it's something that I worked really, really hard on. And the fact that my friend Jay, I got to go out to Pliny the Younger Day for doing research on my first book. I got to sit at their table. They treated me as like an equal, as anybody else. They were super friendly, really, really nice. I bumped into Natalie at an event at GABF, and like she hugged me, and I was like, Natalie hugged me. Like, it was just like, it's when you start into the beer industry and you like go forward, everyone's so nice and friendly, and you forget that like these people who kind of get put on a pedestal, obviously they're amazing brewers, but they're just as nice as you think. And it made me realize how nice people, beer people are. And the fact that they brew Russian River Supplication, which is a barrel aged sour cherry, like it's one of the best like craft made sours, domestic sours in America. We don't get it where I live. The closest they sell it is in Philadelphia, but it's just such a good beer, and just getting to drink it with him and talk to him and like sit at his table and answer my questions for my book was, you know, it was so helpful, and it made me realize how nice beer people are. We're a passionate lot, but we're good people. It's a really great industry. We give back. We always try really, really best to be good people, and I really like that about beer.
Yeah, I think the world certainly needs more good people and more good beer. Was there ever a choice between doing a website and cartoons about cats rather than beer?
I do a monthly comic for Pellicle magazine, Matthew Curtis's magazine in the
UK. Excellent.
called The Adventures of Nelson and Goldie, which is about two brewery cats. And I make it extra schmaltzy and goofy and cute and wholesome. I gravitate towards a lot of wholesome content, especially nowadays. There's a Twitter feed that I really love called Wholesome. I think it's called Wholesome Moments. And it's just, you know, like a man hugging his dog. And you're like, oh, that's nice. That's really nice. I love that. My husband likes the subreddit. He shows me the subreddit that's just subreddit awe, like AWWW, and it's just cute animals. Where he's like, this cat is asleep, and I'm like, that's great, you know, that's adorable. I really think that like wholesome content is really nice. It's also something that is missed in beer. I find that there's not a lot of wholesome beer content, and so I always want to make sure that Pints and Panels is extra wholesome. You know, I know beer is an adult beverage, but I really love like wholesome. I think like there's something about wholesome content, and the fact that they let me draw like cats makes me really happy. Especially there's like one that's extra fat, and it's kind of like an uncle. So there's one that's extra fat and doesn't work, and then there's the other one that like does the mousing and is like very, you know, trim and like wants to. It's kind of an odd couple thing. But they don't talk or anything. It's, I don't know. It's but yeah, it's every month on Pellicle, and it was a fun opportunity. I've been doing it for over a year now. It was really nice to have Matthew ask me to do that. So
yeah, and that is another very well put together website and beer content and great journalism as well, and good podcast as well. So I think as well, you said you worked very hard from, you know, 2010. I'll like to just confirm, it shows. Your hard work does come through. And I think, you know, the archive and things like that, the depth of the resource. And I think one thing that's really good about Pints and Panels is the consistency. I think a lot of websites are fairly inconsistent in their output, but the level of consistency, and it's hard to overstate how hard consistency is when putting content out. I only do this podcast once a month, and it's exceptionally difficult to keep schedule for and organize interviews and all of those things, to run your website and also to, you know, do a job and also study for your Cicerone. Everything else, life is busy to be able to put out content for free. But you also do have a Patreon and a store as well. So please, if you do use Pints and Panels, which you should, please do kick in as well for the Patreon and support Em and all her wonderful work. We've been on a fantastic journey, Em. Thank you so much. But we've got one last choice to go, choice six.
So my last beer is actually one I'm drinking right now, which is the brewery I work at. Fox Farm Brewery is their Quiet Life. It's their Czech Pilsner. I met the owner, Zach, through Josh Bernstein. Josh Bernstein is the beer writer for the New York Times. He's an author. He does a lot of beer writing. He's a good friend of mine. He came to Connecticut with his family and asked, where do I go to visit? And I had recently left my beer job to study full-time for the master. And I was like, oh, well, you're close to Fox Farm. You should go there. Super family friendly. There's a kids play area. There's a big field. It has a 2-pour limit, which I love. So it's very chill. Lots of different beers, lagers, hoppy stuff, mixed fermentation. I met the owner. He opened a bunch of stuff for us. It was really nice. He's a really chill, humble, and friendly guy. I wrote him a thank you note just to be like, hey man, thanks for the beer. A friend of mine used to be their brewer before he moved back to Norway, my friend Steven. So I knew the beer was extra good because Steven was also brewing there. And Zach went, hey, do you want a job? He's like, oh, you know, I need someone to help, you know, like with bottling and canning and kind of like tasting room. And we're not open a lot, but we need an extra hand. And it'd be really nice to have someone with your beer experience. And I said, yeah, sure. Like, I'll help out sporadically. I'm now there about 25 hours a week or so, doing whatever they need. We're doing a lot of curbside, because we're not open because of the pandemic. We haven't been open for 8 months now.
And curbside is selling beer direct to people.
Yes. Yeah. So we do, you pull up in your car, you give us your name, we fill the order, we put it on a table, you drive away. That's it. We also do some limited distribution to restaurants. So we keg just for some restaurants that are in the area, but that's it. It's a wonderful, wonderful place to work. Zach is an amazingly talented brewer and a great guy. I love working there so much. The beer is unbelievable. I get blown away just by getting to take the beer home, especially the lagers and the IPAs. Everything. Like, so we just started, or not just. So for the past 3 years, they've been doing spontaneous brewing as well. And about a year ago, we hired this guy, Dan, who used to brew at Degard, which is a spontaneous brewer in Oregon. He moved from across the country to help us. So now we brew more, and they let me try some of the spontaneous stuff off the Punchins. And I was immediately transported to Belgium. I mean, it tastes so old world. I cannot wait until we get to, we're a ways off, but I can't wait to see what comes out of. They built a special sour barn just for the sour beers, so everything can be separated. It used to be in like a garage, and so they had a barn built specifically that's temperature controlled, extra thick walls and roof. Zach takes everything incredibly seriously. The brewery is the cleanest brewery I've ever seen. I have dropped food on the floor and eaten it. I'm not joking. It is a wonderful place to work, and I'm so glad to be part of that team. We have a Lucre tap, so we have Steidpol from the Czech Republic, and I miss drinking this beer off of doing milk pours and having that beer off the Steidpol. It is just everything that comes out of that brewery is right out of the gate. Like, we brewed a dark mild. And
yes.
It was the first time we had ever brewed an English style beer, and it was unbelievable. And I was like, this is the first time we brewed English. Like, in England, it's called Tiddly. And we do a nitro because cask is not, we would do cask condition. Stephen, the brewer before he left, could do a really good like publican cask condition, soft spile, all that stuff. And we would do that for people in the tasting room. So it was all ready to, and then of course that didn't happen. So we put it on nitro, which is, you know, not the ideal, not the like correct way or whatever, but it works and it tastes really, really good. It's 3.8%. Comes in a tall can, $3 a can. It's really, really good. It's in the tank right now, actually. So I think we can it next week. And it's just, it's a great place to work. One of our tasting room employees, my friend Al, one of our brewers left to go run his own brew pub. And so he's going to take over and learn from Zach. And he's really, really excited. And he asked me a bunch of questions. He's going to brew school. It's just a really nice place to work. And I'm really proud of what they do, and I'm really happy to work there. So,
and that's amazing. And could I also just on a side note, just say any brewers listening, please brew dark mild. It's a dying beer style. I grew up drinking it in the north of England. You couldn't buy it in the south of England. And it is a style that will die. So don't let it die. It's such a great style of beer.
Dark milds are kind of making a comeback in America. It's an up and coming beer style.
It's great to hear. I think Molly Rose and Alexandri, who we mentioned before, recently put a dark mild into a can, which is the first time I've seen a kind of a legitimate English style dark mild. For sale in Australia. There is Cooper's put an ale out called Mild Ale, which is not to the style.
I had White Rabbit. They're dark. Is this a dark mild?
It's in a ballpark. I think it's, you know,
a somewhat of a box. But our dark mild is really, really good. And that's the only British style that we brew. We mostly do New England IPAs. That's what we're known for. And then our lagers. Our Kolsch is excellent. It comes out this week. It's the third time that we've made it. We do a really great Helles. We do a Rauch beer. We do all three styles of Czech. We do a Czech amber, a Czech dark, a Czech, the premium pale lager. We do a lot of mixed fermentation with fooders, a lot of extended aging. And then the, you know, burgeoning spontaneous program, when that kicks off, which will be hopefully soonish, there's a chance that we may do a blend soon. That would be, I'm really excited to see what comes out of that. It's just, it's, and then we've the cool ship. They do a lot, and it's Zach, and he always asks a lot of questions. Like, he'll come to me and be like, hey, we want to brew this. What do you think about this? And I'm always like, well, you're the brewer. Like, he's super know, like, when they brewed an alt beer, they just brewed an alt beer for the first time ever. They cropped the yeast from the Kolsch, made an alt beer. I've never seen the amount someone do that much research. Like, he was committed to being traditional and as, like, good as possible. And I really respect that level of commitment to brew. And he's just such a nice guy. And then his brother runs the tasting room, and he's also super great. It's just like, it's a good, and then I have some coworkers, and we're a good group of people, and we really care about each other. And I like that, even though there's only, I think there are 8 or 9 of us that work there total, it's a really great environment. And the beer is really good. I mean, it has a very, very good reputation. I was talking to this like couple from, they rolled up and they're like, are we late? And I'm like, no, you're good. Like, what do you want to buy? I sold them beer. And I'm like, oh, where did you come from? And they went, Philadelphia, which is like,
wow. Corner.
I was like, you didn't come all the way here just from Philly, right? And they're like, no, they were doing we're about an hour from Treehouse, which has a very good reputation. We're near Trillium, which is another brewery with very good reputation. So people will go to other breweries, they kind of do this like loop, and they'll hit Fox Farm, and then they'll, you know, hit some other breweries in the state or drive home or whatnot. So we get a lot of out of state people that drive from other places, which it makes us feel good that we're doing a good job and making good beer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's probably not a coincidence that you can make a great product when you have very happy, content people working towards making that great product. And a snack as well. What's your favorite beer snack to have with beers?
I love cheese. We're very lucky. Starting during the pandemic, there's a cheese. There's a dairy about 10 minutes or so from us called Cato Corner. That is one of the best cheese making facilities in the country. They make really good washed rind cheeses. Their Manchego one. Raw cow milk cheese in America at the American Cheese Society competition. Like, they're amazing. It's a mother and son that run it, and it's the next town over from us. And so they sell us cheese, but they always give us lots of like trimmings and cuttings and stuff in exchange for beer. So we give their like delivery guy like 12 beers, and they give us a bunch of cheese. So it's really great. And so I eat a lot of their, so I get delicious beer, and then I get to eat, you know, world-class, they have an Age Bloomsday. It's like I don't even know what kind of cheese it is, but it's really, really good. And then they make an amazing blue cheese. And mixing those cheeses together I bring some crackers, and then I pour myself a beer during my lunch break, and that's what I have for lunch. and so that's definitely like the best thing to, I love cheese and beer. I think it's a really, really good combo.
It sounds like a dream. You're winning. You're doing well. You know, and I think it must really help as well, working in such a good quality facility with great people to help support your what you like to do, which is to teach other people and to learn as well. It's clear that you yourself are able to make great educational contents because you are a learner and clearly just want to eat up all of the knowledge that is available to you, which is so nice to see and so refreshing. And please do look at Pints and Panels. It's even if you're not that into beer, it's just really nice to look at. And I think you have taken us on a beer journey with six very wholesome beer stories. So thank you. You filled the brief amazingly well. Thanks so much. And where can people, I'll put all the links in the show notes for where people can find you, but where's the main place you could direct people to?
Yeah, pintsandpanels.com is my website, and that has links to social media. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Pints and Panels. But the website's got links for the Patreon. It's got links to the educational archive, which has a link for everything. And that's all free as well. So if you're interested in learning about beer styles or any other, you know, I mean, there's something for everyone there. So yeah, take a look.
And I know that the people who listen to this podcast are avid fans of American beer and would love to travel. So they should definitely, when that is possible, you can probably expect by the year 2030, people will send you an email and get in touch and certainly visit Fox Farm. And yeah, thanks so much for spending the time today, Em. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is great.
So that was it, Em Sauter from Pints and Panels. So nice to speak to somebody who knows so much about beer and is so passionate about it, but also it's quite daunting. But you know, sometimes people who know a lot about a subject, they have some sort of superiority over you. Emily's the opposite. It's like she just wants to disseminate the information so everybody can know it, in like a really easy, accessible and fun way. It's so good to see, and brilliant that Em is actually working in a brewery on the tools as well as being a student and going for that Master Cicerone, which very few people around the world are able to have that level of knowledge to be able to do that. And I'm sure Emily will be successful in gaining the Master Cicerone status. She certainly deserves it. And check out also the art prints and educational posters that Em does. It's so good. So good. It's like actually making me smile just saying the word, just thinking about it. That is the biggest compliment I can pay. So thanks so much to Em for making the time and adjusting to the time difference, recording that all the way from Connecticut. I'd love to actually get there one day and have a tour around that part of the US, that part of the USA. Sounds like there's so much going on there and such great beer and raw materials as well to make the beer with. And certainly if Em comes over to Australia again, I'm sure we'll all make her feel very welcome and maybe take her for a couple of pints and panels too. So just a couple of other things that you might be interested in. With the Beer Together channel, which has been going since March or April 2020, the longest running show on that channel, the most consistent, is Have a Beer Guess the Year. If you want to play along, it's so much fun. Thursday night, me with comedian Nick Kappa. Just jump onto the Beer Together channel. The link's in the show notes. Have a Beer Guest a Year. You can actually watch previous episodes retrospectively. You can play along at home. You can jump in the chat. We are also planning potentially some live episodes in real life, depending on our COVID restrictions. We would love to do some in person, obviously following all the COVID safe rules at the time of recording. So if you'd like to be part of that, please do follow the show, join in the chat. You can sign up as well on the chosenbrewau.com website. We'll invite you to join the mailing list. I will not send you lots of mail, because I do not have the time. You will not be spammed from my account because I just physically will struggle to get one email to you per year. So if you can cope with that level of interaction, then it's fine. If you want to get in touch as well, please do. I love hearing from you on Instagram. You can send messages, Facebook, Twitter. I use them to various different extents. But I will eventually get back to you, whether you email me, thechosenbrewau@gmail.com, or through the website, thechosenbrewau.com, or through any of those various social media avenues as well. And if you see me in real life, please do say hello at a safe distance. That would be lovely. It is coming up to the fourth birthday of The Chosen Brew. It has crept upon me and I haven't even given it any thought. Send me a birthday message if you want. I don't want any cards. Don't have to send money, although used $5 notes are very useful. But the last birthday was the third birthday with James Smith, Mr. Crafty Pint. And it was live. We had about 50 tickets for that at Burnley Brewing. And it seems like a lifetime ago. But what a fun night. I hope that maybe we can have a fifth birthday party next year without any restrictions. And lots of people in the same room enjoying beers, enjoying learning about beer, enjoying someone's beer journey. We can dream. Hopefully that can happen. And if anybody has any ideas of what a podcast can do for its fourth birthday, send me a message. Let me know. Oh, wow. I've blathered on. Hopefully most of you have switched off by this point. So I will thank you if you're still with me. Otherwise, I'll see you on Thursday night at 8:30 for Have a Beer Guest of the Year on YouTube live stream, or I'll catch you as well on my other podcast, The Wheel of Sport, which I make with my good friend Matt Lavery. That link is also in the show notes. So many good episodes there. We've got one coming out very shortly about Deep Blue versus Garry Kasparov. I mean, how many sports podcasts involve man versus machine, a computer made by IBM, and a chess master? I mean, come on, this is such a good podcast. Get on board, and hopefully you enjoy the ride. But otherwise, take care. I love talking to you as always, and I will catch up with you soon.